All right, back in the Young Turks, Jen Gennano with you guys. Hey, Casper, how you doing?
Good.
All right, we're both back from VidCon, where we spent some time. Riss writes in, if churches want to benefit from taxpayer resources, they should have to pay taxes. Wow, how's that for a novel thought? Excellent point. Okay, and Smaller Dumber Groot writes in, start the countdown for submission of an application for publicly funded rubberization of a Church of Satan playground. Because you know that they immediately apply for everything that the religious folks get. So looking forward to rubberized Church of Satan playgrounds. You're most certainly right about, or very likely to be right about that. Okay, that's hashtag TYT Live if you want to tweet to us during the live show at 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Casper, go.
Yes, all right. We start off with an unfortunate story. An adjunct professor will not be rehired for the next semester due to her comments about Otto Warmbier, the 22-year-old man who unfortunately was detained during his trip in North Korea, came back to the United States with a, you know, he was unconscious, in a coma, and then unfortunately later died. Now, this professor from the University of Delaware said some pretty unfortunate things about him. Let me give you her comments. She wrote on her personal Facebook page that former detainee Otto Warmbier was, quote, typical of a mindset of a lot of young, white, rich, clueless males who come into my classes. She added that Warmbier got exactly what he deserved. Now, keep in mind, he traveled to North Korea. He had taken down some sort of banner in the hotel that he was staying in. It was a propaganda banner. He later put it back up, but it didn't matter. At that point, they had decided to detain him as he was going to the airport to fly back to the United States. He was sentenced to 15 years of hard labor. We don't know exactly what they did to him and why he was in a coma when he arrived back to the United States, but he died as a result of whatever abuse he was exposed to. So, making statements like that is—it's beyond insensitive. It's just not well advised, right? And keep in mind that this is a professor. This is someone who deals with students from all different types of backgrounds. And if she has this very clear bias against any group of students, I think it's problematic. So, Catherine, this is according to a statement from the school. They said that Catherine Detweiler will not. Who last taught in the spring as an adjunct faculty member will not be rehired to teach at the university in the future. They said that her statements do not reflect the beliefs of that university.
I disagree with the decision. Mm-hmm. So first, let me say, saying that he got exactly what he deserved is way over the top. No one deserves to die. No one deserves to get 15 years of hard labor, which he was not. He didn't get to serve the full sentence, partly because he got so sick that he died. And nobody deserves to get anything remotely similar to that for temporarily stealing a propaganda poster in North Korea. On the other hand, and I don't know what him being white has anything to do with this, right? So those are all the things she said that I don't agree with. On the other hand, saying that Otto Warmbier was misguided in going to North Korea is a very normal, rational thing to say. Impolitic to say and insensitive to say right after he dies, although when else would you ever talk about Otto Warmbier? You wouldn't bring it up a year and a half later. But I don't think he should have gone to North Korea. And if you go to North Korea right now as a tourist, I think you're crazy.
But her statement wasn't about how it was a bad idea for her to for him to travel to North Korea, right? Her statement was more about, you know, and I'm giving you what was implied. This isn't what she said exactly verbatim, but she was essentially saying, here's an entitled white guy going to another country thinking he can do whatever he wants to do and get away with it. Well, he gets what he deserves, right? That was really the emphasis of what she was saying. And I think that that's not the right way to go about things, right? So for me, and then she goes on to rant about her white male students. And to me, that's problematic, right? And we would have, you know, we'd be very critical of a professor who said that about a group of black students, for instance, or a group of Muslim students. You are an educator. You are not supposed to treat students differently based on race or religion and all that. So for me, the most problematic thing was not only the fact that she was incredibly insensitive about someone who just died in a pretty tragic way, but the fact that she showed that she has a certain bias against certain students. And that's not, that shouldn't have any place in an educational setting. That's my issue with what she had
to say. So that's why I agree that I think it's a really close call, because the part that bothered me the most of that first sentence was "who come into my classes," meaning that she has some preconceived notion about some set of folks who come into their classes. She mentioned, we didn't mention, she mentioned white, you know, she mentioned male, and she mentioned rich. Even if she left it at rich, it still has some issues. So are you gonna mark down rich kids or have some sort of bias against them? On the other hand, that's the point of academic freedom, is that you allow people to have different opinions. And so now are we gonna fire all the professors in the country who thought it was a bad idea to go to North Korea and that was an entitled stupid thing to do? Now I feel, again, I'm not saying of Obama because he's dead, but don't go to North Korea and think that it's a cool tourist trip because somebody from Vice went, okay? You're not Dennis Rodman.
Right.
It's a really, really stupid idea. Okay, it was a poster. I didn't even know or think that he was stealing it. You know,
what I'm saying?
You might break some other minor infraction. You might have no infractions. But they think it'll help them politically to basically kidnap an American. It's not a free country. They have gulags and concentration camps. So don't flippantly go there. So that's not about Otto, it's about the next set of people. So if you're a professor raging about that, I don't blame you, I rage about it.
Yeah, I rage about that as well. I don't know if I rage about it, but I have openly said that I think it's a really bad idea to travel to countries like North Korea or some of the countries in the UAE, keeping it 100, right? I think that there are a lot of other great places to visit around the world, and you're better suited and safer in places that, you know, don't have human rights violations and things like that. But for me, you know, she went above and beyond, and you know, I would be concerned if I was like the chair of that department. She teaches anthropology, by the way. I would be concerned about, you know, what type of biases are at play and whether or not it impacts the way that she treats certain students. That really did it for me. And more importantly, can we finally get to a place where we're civil, right? Where we actually understand that there are family members of this victim who are grieving right now, and you're talking openly on social media about how he got what he deserved. Just be a human being for once. That's another part of it that just drives me crazy. I mean, we have gotten so toxic in society where we just say whatever we want to say without thinking about it or thinking about the ramifications.
Yeah, so you know what, let's do a poll on it because we're split on it. I bet you a lot of you are split on it. I'm curious what you think. So let's do tycnetwork.com/fired and we'll put that up after the show. We'll have it in the link in the description box for you guys where you can easily vote. I'm curious, do you think this professor should have been fired or not? And good case, obviously, both ways. We don't want her prejudging the students in our classroom, but at the same time, there is academic freedom, and half of what she said was, in my opinion, perfectly reasonable.
All right, we'll see what the poll says. All right, moving on to other news. New studies have found that homelessness among college students continues to be a big problem, and it might actually be a larger problem than previously believed. Now, there have been a number of studies, three recently, that look specifically at community college students and the number that are considered either homeless or, you know, it's called precariously housed. So individuals who might be staying with friends or maybe living in shelters, things like that. Now the study suggests thousands of students at community colleges nationwide could be considered homeless or precariously housed, either because they have been thrown out of home, evicted, or sleep in a shelter, car, or abandoned building. Now there were researchers from Temple University in Philadelphia that specifically looked at this issue, and they found out that anywhere between 12% to 14% of these students are either homeless or precariously housed. And I think the most interesting part about all of this is the kind of reaction people are having to the story. And the reaction is, Well, if you can afford to go to college, you can afford to put a roof over your head. So stop whining and stop crying about it, right? So when I came across this story, I was super curious to see what the comments section included. And it's this weird disconnect, right? You have people who argue, oh, stop whining, pick yourself up by the bootstraps, get your education, and then get a good job. Okay, but A, education is obviously extremely expensive, right? Even in some community colleges, it can be pricey. And B, you can't get a great job at this point without some form of higher education.
C, if you're going to school, despite the fact that you don't even have anywhere to live or sleep there, that's picking yourself up by the bootstraps.
It's amazing.
It doesn't get any more bootstraps than that if you're sleeping in your car and going to college anyway because you're desperate to get an education. These should be the conservative dream guys. Like, man, look at how hard they're working to get ahead in life. So, look, but I'm going to be on both sides here in a sense because now I'm going to criticize liberals or progressives or whoever did this study for using words like precariously housed. Now, you're going to say, Cenk, what are you doing? But look, when a lot of people hear someone is precariously housed, they turn off. They're like, oh, that doesn't mean anything. So I would have stuck with homeless or not homeless because I don't even know what precariously housed means. So my dad, when he was going to college, lived in his uncle's tiny apartment because he didn't have any money at all. Mm-hmm. So was he precariously housed? I don't know. He relied on family.
Precariously housed in this context, and you get super turned off by terms, and I don't know why, right? Like, so when we talk about things like underemployment, you immediately like shut down. You're like, underemployment, not a thing. And that was one of our biggest debates, and it drives me absolutely crazy because yes, underemployment is a thing, and a lot of people, particularly millennials, are suffering the consequences of that. But when it comes to being precariously housed, it's people who are like literally living in their cars, right? So they're not living on the corner somewhere or on the streets.
No, but if you're living in your car, you're homeless. That's okay. Put them in the homeless category. You literally don't have a home. A car is not a home.
We're debating about terms. It doesn't matter.
I'll tell you why. Because it has bad optics, man. When you tell people, oh, that dude's employed, but he's underemployed because we feel like he should have a better job. People go, oh, I'm done with these guys, right?
Jesus Christ. Okay.
When you go precariously housed, I mean, he does have a house, but I don't quite like it. That's the perception that they have, okay? So, okay, I know it's a minor point. I just stick with homeless. But the overall point, the more important thing is, if you're so gung-ho to get an education that you're sleeping in your car, you're sleeping at the YMCA, if that still exists, to make sure you can still get an education, you're an American hero and somebody that people should look up to and not be treated with disdain.
Exactly. And one other thing that I wanted to quickly mention. So this has become such a big problem that there are public figures getting involved trying to donate money and help students who don't have a place to live but really do want to get an education. So Big Sean, he's a rap artist. Sean Anderson. He has a foundation known as the Sean Anderson Foundation. And he's donated some money to an organization that specifically helps students who don't have housing, that have nowhere to live, they're living on the streets. And I think that it's incredible that he's getting involved and other public figures are doing the same. Also, there's the Southern Scholarship Foundation in Florida. And over the last 60 years, they've been providing rent-free housing to homeless college students. Look, just because someone's in college doesn't mean that they're like living high off the hog, right? It doesn't mean that they're wealthy or that their parents are wealthy. A lot of college students are struggling as it is. And then imagine if, these kids have been disowned by their families or, they don't have families. Maybe they were, brought up in the foster care system. These are people who have had it really, really tough for their entire lives, and they need a little bit of help, and that's okay. It's okay to get that help.
And everybody has a different perception. You say college, people think, oh, Harvard, Penn State, whatever, right? No, this study that says 13-14% was done of 70 community colleges. And so there's a lot of different kinds of colleges. And again, if you're going to a community college to better yourself, that's such a great sign of a person who's working hard and more likely to succeed, and someone we should back with all of our fervor, right? And not someone we should look down on.
Exactly.
But I will be starting a foundation for the mediocrely housed. I'm such a dick.
You are a dick sometimes.
Sometimes I go back to my old conservative ways.
Okay. Sometimes a little more than we would like, but it's okay.
Precariously housed.
Anyway, let's just move on, okay, please, right, before I right. start getting super feisty about this story. All right. A so-called prosperity gospel pastor has been indicted for not only scamming the people who follow him, but also alleged massive tax fraud and other scams related to him and his preaching. So this is Todd Koontz, and apparently he, there's William Todd Koontz.
That picture is worth a thousand words, and then some.
He looks like he just got caught with his hand in the cookie jar. That's like the perfect picture for this story. But
he
anyway,
looks like so many different things in that picture. Anyway, yes.
Yes. So he has been indicted, and he has been accused of participating in a check cashing scheme involving travel reimbursements for speaking appearances and for book sales, and then filing fraudulent tax returns in order to hide the money. So here's what he does. And first of all, if you're a bad guy, you know, this is a pretty clever way of dodging taxes, right? Mm-hmm. And getting a little extra money. So he would pretend like he was going on, you know, speaking tours related to his work and things like that, work-related travel essentially. And then he would bill the church that he was working at to reimburse him. And when they would reimburse him for tours that he didn't even take, right? Travel that he didn't even do for work, when they would reimburse him, well, that's not taxed, right? So he would just cash that money, which he didn't earn. He wouldn't get taxed on it. And there goes the whole tax fraud scam.
So to give you a sense of scale, he did this with 102 checks between the years 2010 and 2013. So the tune of $252,000. And then the next year in 2014, he did it for 32 checks for $105,500. So this is a lot of money we're talking about. And I would like to disagree with Anna again on one point. You said it's a pretty clever scheme. Apparently not, because he got caught and he's probably going to go to jail.
Well, he got caught because he got greedy. And oftentimes, yes. Oftentimes people get too greedy, and that is when they get caught. I mean, I could totally, if he didn't do it on such a large scale, I think that he'd get away with it. But I mean, think about the amount of money that he stole from the church on top of stealing money from people who think, hey, if I give this dude a couple $100, I'll somehow become wealthy. Jesus will somehow like sprinkle cash on me. He'll make it rain, right? No, that's not how it works. Please don't be scammed by nut jobs like this guy.
His whole existence is a scam, but it wasn't enough. He had to go over the top and do things that are illegal. So tell him about the essence of the scam of prosperity gospel.
Okay, so let's go to graphic 9. He billed the churches where he made appearances for a full fare first class ticket while purchasing tickets for substantially less. So that was another thing that he did, right?
Well, I'll give him that one, because the dude had to fly in coach and he looks like a big guy. So he probably at least suffered on that one.
He didn't have to fly in coach though. He flew in coach just so he can make a little extra money. By the way, I'm about to tell you like how much wealth he has in just a second. By the way, he promised untold wealth for his followers for the price of a $273 donation, calling it a recovery seed.
Okay, so that's my favorite part of the story. That's the part that's not illegal. That's perfectly fine. That's the prosperity gospel. A lot of preachers, white and black, are doing it all across the country and demanding tons of money from people. And they say, you give me $273 million, I give you a miracle, kind of. It's coming later, and they specifically say, you give us money now, you will get more money later. It's not like, oh, you'll get a prayer and your ankle will get fixed and yada yada, or spot in heaven. No, you'll get richer later. And but since it's from, it's gonna be fine. And he's
this is
gonna,
insane.
And so people are like, yeah, sure, take my money. And then after he has all this money, then again, Anna's gonna tell you in a sec, then he's like, precious, not enough. But if you're a professional scam artist like this, you think, why not scam the government too?
Oh my
well,
God.
Well, a jail cell might be why not, but.
So here's a little taste of how wealthy this guy is because of all these scams. So his church even paid for his condo, which is worth $1.5 million, okay? Also keep in mind that he had not one, not two, but three BMWs, two Ferraris, a Maserati, and a Land Rover. Why do you need that many cars? Why? I just don't understand. By the way, I'm not in the business of telling people what they can and can't have. If you can afford it and you want that many cars, so be it, good luck, whatever, right? But if you are literally taking advantage of people, exploiting them in their time of need, and scamming the government by evading taxes and doing all this shady stuff. Like, really? You did all of that, just so you can afford, like, what, 50 cars? How many cars do you need? I just don't understand. By the way, like, one BMW is enough, one Maserati is enough, one Land Rover is enough, but this dude, it's just not enough. He's so freaking greedy that it's never enough.
It's like the donor class. I've got $40 billion, but I want another $1 billion tax break. So I'm gonna make sure you get kicked off of healthcare so I can get it. Okay, now, look, I hate to say it, but, or maybe I don't hate to say it. No, I am hesitating, so I do hate to say it. Some religious folks, definitely not all religious folks, okay? Come on, man. Really, it's a recovery seed. You know what that means, by the way? That you're already in bad shape. And then you're gonna pay $273 when you're in bad shape so you can recover, right? And you're gonna give it, if your pastor shows up in a Ferrari, he might not be the right pastor. So Jesus told you to give away all of your worldly possessions. Just crack the book open. I'm not a believer, I don't believe in any of the books. But if you do believe in the books, try reading a page or two. First of all, you might be shocked at what's in there. Second of all, you'll find out the good thing about Christianity. There's bad stuff, but there's the good thing about Christianity is that Jesus cared so much about the poor and the needy, and he didn't drive a Maserati. How gullible are you? Stop giving this money to these scam artists.
Man, it's just, it's incredible. I'm stuck on the number of cars he had, just because I don't get it. Right? Like, if I had all the money in the world, I would not have that many cars. It's just a pain in the ass. Like, you gotta insure them.
You are stuck on the cars.
You know why? Because cars are such a gigantic pain in the butt, right? Like, having one car, I know you need it. You need it to get around. Don't get me wrong. A car is important. But one car comes with so many problems and so many unnecessary costs. Like, why would you want seven of them?
There's so many people who would love to have seven cars.
You guys are weird. You are a product of this like hyper capitalistic society that makes you think your life will be better if you have like 50 cars. You don't need 50 cars. You need one car that runs well, that's comfortable, and that's it. That's all you need.
Said Grandma Casper.
Anyway, okay. I can't.
I live your dream, man. I'm precariously carred. Okay, I got a very sensible car,
yeah,
at an excellent price that gets me from point A to point B, and the radio works.
You know what it is? Like, I've been there. Like, I went through, you know, like the single girl stage, and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna spend way too much money on a luxury car, right? Which was a terrible decision. And then you know what I have now? I have a used Honda, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, you're not doing enough recovery seed.
I don't want recovery seed. I want a simple life, free of drama and free of scamming innocent people. That's what I want.
His name is Kuntz, by the way. I mean, there's nothing about this guy that's right. Anyway, sorry if your name Kuntz out there. My name is Uger. Let's call Glass House and all that. But anyway, suddenly miracles are happening. He says, I want to work with your faith for quick things, swift things. So not only is Jesus going to make you rich, it's a get rich quick scheme run by... Don't believe the hype. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, something happened is at a gay pride event that is very controversial.
Yes.
And it is not done by conservatives. It's done by so-called liberals. And a doctor gets charged with a crime. Did she have it coming? So fascinating stuff when we return. Suspended account writes in, but that was referring to the teacher, this is an interesting point, but that was her personal Facebook page.
I don't care. She's really dumb because smart people first don't air your ridiculous hatred on public forums. And then on top of that, like obviously she posted something that was publicly available, right? Because it's one thing, I think you shouldn't post stuff like that, period, especially if you're an educator or you do a job that, you know, provides a public service. But I don't know. She's just not smart. I don't care if it's on her personal account. I don't care if she wrote it on like a government website. Doesn't matter. You should know better than that.
I definitely have a less harsh view of her, but I hear you, sister. Laura V 2.0 writes in with Anna on underemployment. It isn't not having the job you want. It's struggling to cobble together enough hours to live on. I know, Laura. I know. I got beat down on that, and you guys are right. Just please, let's move on, okay? To all of you guys.
We don't like that.
Okay, anyway, Keeganhead says, I don't even know what I just did. Keeganhead says, a religious person scamming people, I'm shocked. And Larry Vetter says, maybe Kuntz was trying to get money to rubberize his playground. That's funny, Larry. That's really funny. I'm giving you a t-shirt.
Just let them rubberize the playground. You guys probably had a completely different.
Of course you can't do it. It's not about the playground or rubberizing anything. It's about then they want the door, then they want the church, they want the building, they
no,
want the
No, I get
teachers.
It. I know. But I mean, the kids need the rubberized playground. You don't want the kids to get hurt.
What about the children?
What about the children? Okay. Anyway, but yeah, I get it. Tax exemptions, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Same blah, old blah, shit blah. Every year. It goes on and on and on and on. It's like recycled news cycle. It drives me crazy.
But they keep winning. Right?
Yeah, and they will. They'll away continue to keep winning.
Slowly by slowly. Anyways, okay. All right, what's next?
All right. There was a gay pride march that took place in Chicago. And even though there was a larger, more inclusive gay rights march, there was also an additional march known as the Dyke March. That's what they titled it. And interestingly enough, even though this was supposed to be about inclusion, tolerance, and acceptance, it turned out to be the opposite for a certain group of people. Now, apparently there were some protesters who were Jewish, they identified as gay, and they wanted to not only represent their pride for being gay, but they also wanted to represent their pride for being Jewish. So they had these rainbow flags that also included the Star of David. Well, apparently some people were triggered by that and decided to kick these individuals out of the march. Now, the Jewish Star of David flag was banned from the city's annual Dyke March celebrations, and several people carrying the flag were removed from the march because their presence, quote, made people feel unsafe.
Nonsense, totally ridiculous. Okay.
What? Okay, let me continue. The Dyke March is described by organizers as being a more inclusive, more social justice oriented march than the city's main pride parade. No, but it's not. It actually ended up being the exact opposite. Are you kidding me right now? So they're concerned about, you know, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and what the Star of David represents. They're worried that some people who are pro-Palestinian in that conflict will be triggered in a negative way by seeing the Star of David. Yeah, but the Star of David doesn't simply symbolize Israel or specifically the Israeli government. It symbolizes Jewish religion, right? Yeah. So it's what are you guys doing? I don't even know. I don't even know what political ideology I fall on or fall in, but this is not it. This is insane.
So, by the way, I want you guys to be clear. We're not using the word trigger. Apparently, they did. Laurel Grauer was the marcher who was kicked out, one of the marchers who was kicked out. She said, they were telling me to leave because my flag was a trigger to people that they found offensive. Prior to this march, I had never been harassed or asked to leave, and I had always carried the flag with me. She'd actually been going for 10 years, for over a decade. To the march, so it's not a trick. Like she's not trying to infiltrate the Dyke March to put an Israeli flag in there and go, "Got you!" Right? No, she's just a Jewish lesbian who wanted to take pride in her identity in both ways. It's the whole thing is about pride. You can't say, "Okay, you're proud of one part of the identity, but your other part of your identity triggers us." And look, now let me be clear. I know the direction that they went in, and then let me talk about the misdirection. So the direction is, we're really against Israel's occupation of the Palestinian people, and we want to be inclusive and thoughtful about the Palestinian people. So the beginning of the road is good. That Israel does have an occupation. I'm totally against that occupation. I think it's a terrible idea overall, not just for the Palestinians, but also for Israel. I think that it is morally corrupting, and I think that We've tried it for over 50 years. It's not working. In order for Israel to be what it wants to be and maintain democracy, you have to have a two-state solution. So if that was your intent, okay, great. I agree with that goal of ending the occupation. But even if it wasn't just, of course, Anna's 1000% right, and that should be a conversation ender, that the Star of David is also about being Jewish and not being Israeli. There's no evidence that any of these people are Israeli or even support Israel.
And by the way, exactly, there might be people who decided to fly that flag and they are Israeli, but that doesn't even necessarily mean that they're in agreement with what Israel's government is doing with the occupation.
Yeah, there's three layers of this and none of it is right. They could just be Jewish and they could be against the occupation and you kick them out for no reason at all, right? And number two is they could be for Israel and there's nothing wrong with that. You can be for Israel. Now you say, well, I mean, there's something wrong because Israel's in favor of the occupation. But then another protester made a great point about that. Ruthie Steiner, I say protest, I mean marcher. She wanted to be a marcher. She's also in the same community. And she said, is every nation which does not have a clean civil rights record and also hosts a pride parade now guilty of pinkwashing? So pinkwashing is what they accuse Israel of. You're good on LGBT issues, but you're, in their opinion, terrible against the Palestinians. So you're pinkwashing your crimes against the Palestinians by being decent to gay people. But then you could use that argument, Ruthie's right, you could use that argument against any country, including
That's
America.
Right. That's right.
Right? We have other issues with civil rights in this country, certainly. So by being decent to LGBT people, are we pinkwashing our crimes in Ferguson or and elsewhere? It's a preposterous argument. So they're wrong in almost every imaginable way.
It's kind of amazing because I feel like some people on the far, far left are like, they're just in the business of making enemies out of allies, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're offended by everything. Everything triggers them. They need a safe space. Really, you need a safe space from the Star of David?
Yeah, like, that's the other thing that just drove me crazy.
I can't take it anymore. I really can't. Like, please grow a set of balls and like be inclusive. If you're genuinely concerned with being inclusive, you don't practice what you preach by excluding people because you feel unsafe by a flag. By the flag that has the Star of David on it, which is like, in my opinion, one of the least offensive things imaginable.
We get on the right wing all the time for being Orwellian. When they say freedom when they're trying to take your freedom away. They say they're gonna reform something when they're going to try to kill it. And the list goes on and on. So if you say you're inclusive, don't be excluding people. It's Orwellian. And so it's a weird warping of the political spectrum where people start to meet. And look, you don't need a safe space, even if it were a flag, which it's not. It was not an Israeli flag. I don't care. It could have been 1,000 Israeli flags. You don't need a safe space from a flag. You just don't. You could be 1,000% against the occupation. It doesn't mean that flag is going to attack you.
Right.
Okay. And come on, you've got to get the irony of a gay pride event discriminating against Jews. You've got to get that irony. But apparently these folks, and look, and I also don't want people to get to then put this on every pride event, on every gay community, on every liberal,
one march
on every
Chicago.
Progressive.
Right.
So I'd like to think we're very progressive. And as I've said very, very clearly, I couldn't be more against the occupation. But this does not represent progressives. And I think it was a disastrously bad move on their part.
Yes. All right, moving on to the next story. A doctor in Oklahoma who overprescribed opioids and other prescription drugs has been charged with murder after several of her patients died as a result of the prescription pills that she prescribed them. Now, the doctor worked at the Sunshine Medical Center in Oklahoma. And unfortunately, one of the victims was Sheila Bartles, and she was given a dangerous cocktail of excessive prescription drugs that ultimately killed her back in 2012. The pharmacist handed her 510 pills that day, all legal because she had a prescription with the signature of her doctor, Reagan Nichols. Now, that included hydrocodone, Xanax, and a muscle relaxant known as Soma. Nichols is charged with second-degree murder in the death of Bartles and four other patients. some of whom died just days after receiving large prescriptions from the doctor. Also,
can I just interrupt for a second? You know, when I first read started reading the story, saw the headline from the Chicago Tribune, I thought, man, they're arresting a doctor for overprescribing drugs, and she didn't kill him. The person took the pills. But then when I heard that there was four other deaths from the same doctor, then I started to think, uh-oh. Wait, if three patients already died from you overprescribing drugs, and you're like, whatevs, I'll keep overprescribing drugs to the tune of 510 pills a day.
Not a day, 510 pills total with all the prescriptions filled.
But that day she got it.
Yeah, that day she received all of those pills, yes,
right.
From the pharmacy. Now, and look, keep in mind that, you know, these people trusted their doctor, right? And I want to be clear about another thing. We don't know what the intentions were of this doctor. We don't know if there was some sort of like pharmaceutical company corrupting her. We don't know any of that, right? That's all information that will play out in court. But what we do know is that in the very least, there was some negligence there, because there had been deaths previously, and she continued prescribing these dangerous prescription drugs and mixing them in a way that leads to death, right? So let me give you some more details on that. She apparently, Nichols, prescribed more than 3 million doses of controlled dangerous drugs from 2010 to 2014, including irrational and dangerous combinations of drugs that led to 5 deaths. She prescribed patients who entrusted their well-being to her a horrifyingly excessive amount of opioid medications. Nichols' blatant disregard for the lives of her patients is unconscionable. That's according to Mike Hunter, who is the attorney general in Oklahoma. Now, if you're wondering about precedent, you know, in cases like this, there have been doctors in the past who were sent to prison as a result of overprescribing dangerous drugs. So in February of 2016, another doctor, Lisa Tseng, was sentenced to 30 years to life in prison after 3 of her patients fatally overdosed, according to the Los Angeles Times. So right now, obviously, we're dealing with a very serious opioid epidemic. It killed 33,000 people in 2015 alone, and the numbers continue to rise. And so understandably, I think authorities are now starting to turn to pharmaceutical companies and also to doctors that are overprescribing these drugs. It's a really big problem, and it's kind of scary to think about doctors facing severe consequences like this, because where do you draw a line? Like, when do you determine that a doctor overprescribed or was negligent or should be charged with murder? I don't know. I don't want it to get to a point where doctors are afraid to prescribe drugs to people who need them. But at the same time, I mean, I feel like this case showed that there were excessive drugs provided.
Well, so here's rule of thumb. If 2 of your patients have died from prescription drugs that you prescribed to them, and you had prescribed a lot of them, be a little bit more careful going forward. And by the way, there is a possible motive, if you will. Now, Lisa Tseng, remember, was convicted and was sentenced to 30 years to life. She had made millions from overprescribing opioids to drug addicted patients.
Yeah.
So it's not to smear good doctors who are doing good work on this, but there are some that are clearly unscrupulous, as there are in every profession. And right now, the opioid abuse kills an average of 91 people a day. So yes, we could all afford to be a little bit more careful. And if your doctor, by the way, prescribes you that much, you don't have to take it. And come in with unfortunately, some doctors are incentivized in the wrong direction, whether it's from pharmaceutical companies or just to make more money from their business, right? And sometimes it is a business. So be careful, be very careful with prescription drugs. They do lead to opioid abuse, of course not every time, but a lot of times. So whether it's a painkiller or any of these other drugs, nice and easy. Okay, yeah, so in her case, after the Nichols case, 5 cases, that'll do it.
Yeah.
I'd look into charges.
Right, I mean, we'll see how it plays out in court, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, we're not saying they did it, that's for a court to decide. Okay, we're out of time for today. Much love, guys. Remember, today we started the free trial. You get a whole month of Young Turks membership, where you'll be able to watch the post game we're about to do for you guys for free. So go to tytnetwork.com/join, click on the $10 a month. But if you put in free TYT as a promo code, that first month is free, okay? So try it out right now. All right. Bye-bye.